Welcome to the Ausländer. Welcome back to another episode of the Ausländer. As you know, these podcasts and these episodes are mainly made to welcome guests to the show, and they can talk about their experiences being abroad and how did they fail, how do they still live in other countries. In this case, maybe it's not the perfect example, as we have Tassos today here. He is Greek from Thessaloniki, currently living in Athens, and professionally a filmmaker. So that's maybe one of the most diverse professions that we had in the podcast. So
is it?
I think so, yeah. Okay. Welcome, Tassos.
Thank you, man. Good to be here.
Yeah, let's go directly to it. I mean... As I already said, you grown up in Thessaloniki, which is a city in the north of Greece itself.
It is, yeah.
As far as I know, you have lived in multiple places. I mean, you move quite a lot.
A lot, yeah.
Because of your profession, let's say like this.
Yeah, not only because of my profession, it's because it's my choice also, you know. I don't really like living in Greece. So it's funny that you say, oh, I live in Greece. It's just, for me, it's a kind of a period that I'm, how you say, an intermediate period, you know. So I'm going to be moving to Spain pretty soon, hopefully. So hopefully when this airs, I'm not going to be in Greece. So
okay.
So yeah.
Well, it will be air probably pretty soon. So we will see if you're already living or not. I mean, first question, being Greek, why do you not like living in Greece? It's still your motherland. I don't know, most of the people, they always have this kind of memory of their home as something.
I mean, ever since I was young, you know, it was difficult. Like, I felt out of place in Greece ever since I was really young, and I couldn't really get why. And it wasn't until I traveled abroad that I figured, oh, it's cool, because like people think in different ways than I was raised, you know. And I don't know, like, I'm proud being Greek, you know, don't get me wrong. I feel like we have like a really rich culture that, you know, for example, Mediterranean cultures, like, you know, we have like this, it's difficult to explain, but the social skills are more developed. And I feel like it's because of the way we're raised. And so I'm really proud to be raised in this part of the world with this specific culture. But I don't really like the modern day culture of Greeks, you know, and I cannot really relate. And because I travel quite a bit, you know, because of what I do, but it's because it's what I want to do. Every time I come back, I had this conversation the other day with a friend. Every time I get back, it's not that I have like this prejudice that Greece is like, it's not good and I don't like it. I don't, but every time I come back, I try to keep my mind open, you know, and to be like, okay, let's try this time. Maybe this time is going to be different. But every time, I don't know, like I just don't connect with the place, you know, and I don't like suppressing, you know, my emotions just to be here. And to be honest, like for me being here, for example, I have a place in Athens, I don't pay rent. For me, establishing and creating a life here would be on paper easier, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Compared to going to a different country, trying to figure everything out, you know, how is yourself, so.
Definitely, I mean, it's always one of the big things. I mean, I think a lot of people in the podcast who has already recorded episodes, and it's a recurrent topic, let's say, like this, when you jump to a new country, and there is always the language barrier, which, I mean, for you in Spain, it will not be that big as you speak Spanish. But even with that, you speak Mexican Spanish, which is really funny. And it will be interesting to have another episode at some point once you lived in Spain to see how do you change your Spanish to or not. I mean, eventually, always there is bureaucracy, there is adaptation and whatever. But there is people who really, their lifestyle, it's not settling down. We just, come on. How we know each other through this digital nomads group of technological people.
Yeah.
I haven't started drinking yet. Wow, okay. And eventually, there is some people who comes. I don't know, we remember Omar who has never been more than 3 months in the same country in his life, so it's crazy.
You know what, that's a good point, because I feel like for me, going to Spain, I'm going with a mentality, so I don't want to tell to myself, oh, you're going there for like many years, not to put pressure on myself. But one of the big decisions, like reflecting on my, because I'm guessing we're going to talk about this, but I did this big trip in the Americas, in Mexico, in the US, in Guatemala, and it was like 14 months for me, like nonstop moving all the time, which was like exhausting for many different reasons. And before I came back, I knew I would be coming back to Greece, right? And I was living in a beach town in Mexico, and I went to the beach and I tried to reflect on those 14 months, you know, and I was like, oh, like, what did I learn? You know, because it's actually also really interesting, because most people that travel all the time are kind of hippies, you know, and they travel. Not that this is like something bad, you know, but I'm trying to say that they travel with this mentality of like, oh, you know, no big deal. I'm going to see what happens when my money runs out, you know. But for me, I was always traveling intentionally. I was traveling because I wanted to get to know myself and what I do like, what I don't like, you know. So I'm always like searching, like internally, you know, and externally. So I was like, okay, what's the big decision I'm gonna, I don't know what. So I make a big decision, right? And I was like, I'm done with full-time travel. I've been traveling full-time 3 years now. And it's been exhausting, because I'm also like, you know, creating at the same time, which is like exhausting, because it's one thing to, you know, to be being a digital nomad and having a steady kind of job, I'd say, and different because for me, I'm trying to finance different projects, and it's really stressful on that regard, on top of like figuring everything out with the visas and, you know, staying somewhere. Yes, of course. So I was like, okay, so coming back to Spain, I want to find a place to be my base, you know. And one thing I do know is I don't know where that's going to be yet. Spain is going to be my first try, let's say. Maybe I'll see how I feel there. But what I do know is that base is not going to be Greece. So wherever else aside of Greece. So,
it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's also really cool that you just like go for the idea of, I mean, you said 3 years of constantly moving, traveling around. That's exhausting. Like, it's really exhausting to change from one country and settling in one country specifically. Moving around, it's crazy. And I think the concept of having a base where you always return and you still feel part of it and you still feel comfortable in it, it's really important.
It's also like mentally really important, because it's not that the physical space, it's that mentally in your mind, you know, I have my own space. If everything goes wrong, I can always go back. Up until this point, I didn't have that, because in Greece, even the place I'm living now wasn't my place. So, and also like mentally, I don't feel like home here, you know, so I don't have this sense of community here. So for me, when everything went bad, I don't know, when like tough things would happen, when I was in Mexico in the middle of nowhere, or in the US or wherever that was really far away, I cannot be like, oh, you know, I'll just catch a 2-hour flight, it's so far away, you know. So you have to figure everything out. But back to, I think this is a really important like point to discuss. Back to people that travel all the time, nonstop. Like, I won't forget when I went to Mexico for the first time in 2020. I met this French guy that he was traveling nonstop for 7 years, hadn't gone back to France. And not only he was traveling 7 years, he was doing amazing experience, you know, like climbing Everest and then going to the Andes and I don't know. And I realized at that point that, you know, traveling full time and like, because you know people like that never stop.
Yeah.
It's like being in a sense, like it's being in a state of a constant high. You're always high. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a natural drug that you cannot stop, and you always need more and more. And the other day I stumbled across this article that was saying that this natural like how do you call it, an actual, not disease, and actually it's not, it's a condition that it's recognized by the...
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. It's a condition like that. I don't remember how it's called. It's really, and I was like, yeah, I have this condition, you know, and it's really difficult to find like a purpose in a certain place and not move all the time, because moving all the time for all your life, I feel like it's not sustainable, you know. It's a natural drug, and I see many people, like myself included, you know, I've been trying to battle this. I don't think it's a bad thing. It's just, I feel like after a certain point, in order to build like personal relationships and to like grow your business, whatever you want to do, you need to have a base. It's not possible like to, because you're wasting your energy, you know what I'm saying? Like left and right. That's how I feel, like, at least. So I think eventually setting up a base is important.
Makes totally sense. I mean, like now that we are talking of Spain and before jumping to the big America's trip and the whole like around Mexico, Guatemala, we can talk about your documentary in Mexico. Just quick remark, we are drinking a kind of weird beer, to be honest. Like Tassos asked me for Spanish beer. And I went to the supermarket here in Greece, and the weird thing is that they don't have... So you see Estrella Damm in some bars here from time to time, which I think it's, besides San Miguel, maybe one of the beers from Spain that has positioned itself outside of Spain the best. If you go to Madrid, you will never have Estrella, probably. I mean, in not a lot of bars, yes.
Oh, wow.
And it's a quite... regional Catalan beer, let's say. They have Estrella Galicia, which is from the north, and I like it more than the normal Estrella, so you should try that.
Okay.
But what we are drinking today, it's the version called Inedit, which is a collaboration with Ferran Adrià, which was one of the best chefs in the world.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is that in Alfabita, here in the supermarkets, they don't have normal Estrellas.
Oh, wow.
And they only have these kind of beers. Ferran Adrià. It's just like crazy. But yeah, so we are drinking that. I normally put a little bit of introduction of what we drink during the podcast.
Okay, fair enough.
So...
My bad.
Let's stop talking about Spain, because I suppose we can record another episode whenever you have lived enough in Spain, if that's your plan. Let's jump to America. Why did you decide to leave? Did you leave directly from Greece to
I went America? From Greece to Mexico. It was November 27th, I think, 2020.
November 2020, so that was already high COVID
month. Yeah, and that was the reason. That was initially the reason why I left. Of course, it evolved in something different, you know, as the months and the years passed. But initially it was a way to escape, you know. I had a friend in Mexico City, and he was like, you know, just come. Because at the time, I had just moved to Athens. Like a month ago. And as soon as I moved to Athens, the second lockdown came. And I came to Athens, you know, to do more freelance, because I was in Thessaloniki, and, you know, it's easier to do business here. But then everything closed, and I kind of foresaw what was coming. And I was like, yeah, you know, whatever, I'll just go. And my friend was like, you know, you can just stay here a month, film some content, whatever, and just, you know, let's go back. And I had some money saved, so I was like, you know what, why not? And
you are already a filmmaker here in Greece, so you were already doing projects here when you were in Thessaloniki?
Yeah, I was doing mostly freelance, you know, like videos for, you know, for cafes, restaurants, for businesses, like for their social media, you know.
So and, which is something driven.
Yeah, which is something I still do to this day, because it's the easiest way to make money, because it's something that the market, you know...
You need to support your other projects.
Obviously.
Of course, makes sense. Cool. So you escaped from the second lockdown, let's say, like this, and a little bit of whatever. And you arrived to DF, Mexico City.
Yeah. Well.
That's a huge city. It's a completely different culture. Like, even if they have similitudes. I mean, I think that the South American, some parts with the Mediterranean people, maybe also I have the perspective because speaking the same language for us, it's quite easy to understand each other. But eventually, how it was the first moment of arriving to Mexico DF, because Mexico DF, Mexico City itself, it's not a representation of what Mexico is.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I think it's important to talk about how I was able to leave, because at the time, because we were under lockdown, you needed like a specific reason to leave Greece. You couldn't just leave as a tourist.
Of course.
At the time. So I was super stressed out. Like, I was calling so many people, like the government had a number for information, but that, you know, you were calling and they had no idea like what the regulations were. It was so funny. Then I was calling the airport, the embassies, and I was trying to figure out a way. And so a friend of mine that owns a business here, filmmaking business, registered me as his employee. So that's how I was able to leave Greece, you know.
So they sent you as an employee of a filmmaker?
Yeah, whatever. Okay. Just to leave.
So they were really stressed. Controlling?
Yeah.
Because eventually, one of the big things that has happened right now in COVID times, at least here in Greece, is that they have a lot of regulations and there is a lot of things. And then you arrive to the airport and nobody fucking control you.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's true. It's true. At the time, I remember because it was a night, you know, I think it was curfew, 10 p.m. I don't remember exactly. And I had an early morning flight. So I drove at the airport super late at night. So it was after curfew. So the police stopped us. They were like, oh, where are you going? So we had like this document or whatever. And my friend was like, yeah, I'm driving. And my friend, you know, that has the business, that I was his employee on paper. He had also all the gear in his car, so in case to be more like legit, you know.
Okay, crazy.
So I was super stressed out to leave Greece, you know. I was like, because if something went wrong, I wasn't sure, you know. And yeah, arriving in Mexico, it was fun because, I mean, now I feel like I'm a part of me is Mexican now, you know, because I spent there like overall 10 months, 3 times I went in and out. So I also speak Mexican Spanish, you know, I wasn't speaking Spanish before going to Mexico, and I have a lot of friends there, you know, community. So I feel like Mexico is like my second home. But arriving, I had no idea. I mean, I won't forget, like, first couple of days, we were living downtown, and downtown Mexico City is kind of dangerous. You need to, like, you know your way around. And my friend, he was Greek, the friend that invited me that I told you earlier. And he was also like making content on YouTube. And second day I was there, or first day, I don't remember, we went out with the cameras. And my friend has like a small GoPro, so he doesn't care. But I have like a big camera, expensive camera. And we're walking. So we go out to the hostel, downtown Mexico City, in some dodgy street. And I was walking around with a camera in my hand. And my friend was like, what are you doing here? Because he was living in Latin America for a long, long time, like in many different countries, you know. But I had no idea, you know. It's like, he's like, put the camera in your bag right now. Yeah.
Crazy. I mean, how was the situation with COVID at that point of time in Mexico? There was any kind of regulation? Nobody caring as a lot of times?
Yeah, I mean, in Mexico City... People, you know, because it's the capital, people still use masks, but I don't know, people don't really care compared to here, because Greece, I mean, you were here during the lockdown, were you?
No, I arrived later.
Yeah, but I'm sure you've heard how it was here. Yeah, it was really, really bad, and people were like freaking out. Like in Spain, the same thing, I think.
Yes.
There there were some regulations. Compared to today, for example, if I compare it to normal life, yeah, there were some regulations, but compared to what was happening in Greece at the time, it was total liberty. I remember you could go outside like in bars, you know. I won't forget, I stayed, you know, a few weeks in Mexico City, and I went to Oaxaca, like south of Mexico. And I remember, yeah, in Mexico City, bars were closing really early. But in Oaxaca, it was like they had less cases and bars were open like really late. So I won't forget, like I went out for a beer or something like really late after midnight. And it was really surreal because I hadn't done that in such a long time. I was like, why am I outside? And why are people like having fun? It was really like difficult to adjust, but once I was there, like, you know, then I got on the other side of the coin. I was like a total liberty, and it was fun, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I mean, I don't really know if the perspective of that was just like Do they already at that point of time they already had cases in a high scale? It was not the moment of, because I remember the moment, at least in Spain, Italy, I suppose here in Greece, in Germany, it was also like, there is a virus in China that it's spreading, whatever. And they were like, this will never arrive here. And then when the Italian cases started raising up like hell, everyone was like, uh-oh, we now have the problem here. But nobody knew how to react. Nobody knew how to do anything. I mean, I don't think that was the time already in Mexico. In Mexico, they already had the cases. And Latin America already was.
They had a lot of cases. I think it was like top 15, like worldwide, okay, like in cases. But, you know, like Mexico, people are chill. And you know what's funny? When COVID started, was it like January 2020?
Mm.
I was in Asia at the time.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was in China, but I was in Thailand. And I remember, you know, I was backpacking in Vietnam and different countries. And I remember my mom, I was taking a night bus to Bangkok or somewhere. And my mom texts me this, like, she's like, oh, there's this virus, like people, like, you know, because she was watching the news. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I don't care. I don't know. But yeah, I've been traveling ever since COVID started, like during all the 2.5 years, what it is now. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So going back to Mexico.
Yep.
You stayed a short period of time in Mexico City. Any story from Mexico City? Because I know there is always stories about Mexico City. There is always something that it happened something. It always happens something in Mexico City.
Yeah. Mexico City in particular, I don't really remember. I was just like, it was super intriguing to me that it was a different culture. Now that I know the culture and I speak the language, I realize there are many similarities to the Greek culture. Mm. For example, both cultures are really conservative, I feel like. Mm. But I don't know. I don't remember like exact moment, like weird moment, Mexico City. That was a weird moment that I just described with the camera. Exactly. My friend was like, but it was my first day in Latin America. I don't know, you know. I was ignorant. But I remember it was really intriguing with the language. And I remember also, what also struck me was that people were really friendly.
Mm.
And, you know, people that probably haven't visited Mexico, let's talk about Mexico. We have this perception of it being dangerous because of Narcos and Netflix and stuff. I didn't, but most people that saw me going there, everybody was like, you know, like, be careful. And it struck me that, of course, you gotta, in Latin America, you have to like be careful. For example, you won't go in like a dark street in the middle of the night. Even here, nothing, of course.
Yeah, you don't do that in Raval in Barcelona, you know, like
exactly.
If you are not a local, you don't do that. So I think yes. I mean, I think they had a lot of problems in the past with a lot of conflicts and a lot of whatever, but come on, the first conflict in Latin America was started by no other person than us Spanish going there. So eventually, like, I understand. You need to be a little bit more careful than you would be in your home. But I think that nearly applies to a lot of places. It's not only Latin, and it's just like, go to Barcelona as a blonde, tall guy, blue eyes in the middle of Barcelona past 12 in the night in Raval, for example, and enter a street without exit that has no light. It will happen exactly the same that it will happen in Mexico City.
Absolutely. Even here, nothing. So, like, because many people ask me, you know, because I travel on my own, mm-hmm. and the common question is, oh, are you afraid of, like, is it dangerous or whatever? And I always say, back to your point, that you use your common sense, you know, it's common sense, like what the rules that you would apply back in your home. Maybe, of course, you're more familiar in your home, but you know, you apply in every single like, you know, city or country. Even when my sister, I remember, she used to live in East London, for those of that know, is like kind of spooky at night, so you know, even there, so it applies everywhere. Yeah,
I totally agree. I mean, it doesn't mean that you, I mean, they pay an extra attention in certain places. If you're going as a filmmaker to record a documentary about the cartels of the north of Mexico, which they exist, it's not they are not there, they exist. You need to pay an extra attention. I don't know if you want to talk it about right now, but you came back from Ukraine 2 times right now, mm-hmm. with the war going on. you don't enter Ukraine right now with only having the perception of common sense.
Yeah.
You need to be an extra level of whatever, of brave, first of all, but in the second, of perception, of having ears and eyes in absolutely every corner, absolutely everywhere.
Absolutely. And before we jump into the whole Ukraine thing, for example, me going to Ukraine, I went there being, of course, it was my first time in a war zone, but I had a lot of experience in high stress environments.
Okay.
I filmed in the borders of Mexico and Guatemala where they smuggled drugs and stuff. So I filmed in areas like this that were really intense.
Mm.
So going into Ukraine, I don't just go as another foreigner. Of course I am, but I have a lot of experience in high stress environments. Okay. So I know how to behave and, you know, how to talk, where to film, you know, and all those things that go with it.
Makes sense. Yeah. I would say we wait a little bit more to introduce Ukraine in the whole environment. I think it's a topic that we need to talk about because it's now and absolutely, it's happening right now. And I really want to know your opinion and your experience in there. But back to Mexico. So you were with your friend. You decided to go out of Mexico City on your own then, or you got some project already assigned?
No. So like after a few weeks, we split with my friend and I was traveling, you know, like I was, Mor Ferrand Andrea beer.
Mm-hmm.
Gracias. And I just started traveling and making videos on YouTube. I was making like, you know, normal travel videos, but, you know, a few months in, then I met like a girl and then we were together kind of, and then we split and, you know, and I was traveling for like 6 months. Like, you know, I was making videos on YouTube, but I was making like normal travel logs. You know, I also hitchhiked in Mexico, which is another story.
So
I was hitchhiking in Mexico. I have a series on my channel on YouTube. You can watch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was great. It was an amazing experience. Actually, it was one of the experiences that helped me really improve my Spanish.
I definitely, you need to. Right? It's forcing you to improve it.
Because I was traveling with another girl, like a Mexican girl, that she had been like hitchhiking 4 years. She has like a lot of experience, so I wouldn't do it like alone from the get-go, but I trust her. She had a lot of experience, so I went with her. But we were traveling in small Mexican villages, you know, and people don't speak English, and the guys that were giving us the ride, like the rides, they were speaking Spanish. So like, I remember at the time, I'll tell you, like, this is a good tip for anyone wanting to learn a new language, okay? You go to the country, the first thing you learn is, the first phrase I learned, it was like, ¿cómo se dice?
You know, yeah.
How is this called? So every time, like, we're driving, like, I was like, ¿cómo se dice eso? You know, and, like, how do you call this and that and that? And I was writing, like a lot, you know? And that's how I learned Spanish. And then, yeah, so I was doing all these videos, but it wasn't really feeling like I was contributing to something, you know, because I'll tell you why I'm going back again. When I was in Asia, I went to Myanmar, and a country that now is under a military coup. But at the time, it was open, and it was the first time, because I did some expeditions there, and I really traveled off the beaten path. And it was the first time that I had, like, a feeling of, wow, you know, like, you don't see these things as a tourist, you know. I've done, like, several projects there. And that feeling was always in my mind, you know. Like, for example, I went to Mexico and started traveling like a normal backpacker, like in a touristy way. But that wasn't covering my soul, you know, and my creative. Like, it wasn't covering me as an artist, you know. And then I was like, you know, anybody can just grab a camera and like go to a place and drink a beer and show how it is, which is great. It just wasn't working for me as a person and as a creator. And then I realized... I want to do documentaries, because on YouTube and in my spare time, I only watch documentaries, travel documentaries, and I have some creators that I follow, and I was like, oh, I wish I could do that, you know, but I was always like, I was entitled, you know, I was like, oh, I cannot do that, I need this, and I need that, and then I just woke up one day, and I was like, you know what, like, I'll figure out, and then I did, and I still haven't released everything that I filmed in Mexico. For example, what I told you earlier, when I went to the border with Guatemala, I went to the worst border of Mexico. That border is the worst Everybody was telling me that it's even worse than like the borders that the US and Mexico share. It was like super bad. And it wasn't a touristic border. You know, most tourists that were crossing from Mexico to Guatemala were crossing from more like well-known points. Mm-hmm. I went to the like worst border and it was really intense, man. And I went there obviously to film. But yeah, so I started, and that's how I started making documentaries, basically. I was traveling to Mexico and then I was like, oh, what now, you know? What now personally, what now creatively? And I was like, I need to make documentaries and I need to find a way to make a living out of this. I'm still figuring that out, meaning selling the documentaries, because it's one thing to create and another thing to sell, you know? It's the creative part and the business part. So, but, you know, as a creator, I feel better, like, you know, because I feel like when you create something, even if like 1,000 people watch it or like 2 people watch it, if you can like change the mind or make somebody think differently, doesn't matter how many people that is. I feel like that's why me personally, I was brought to this universe and to this life to leave something behind, to leave a legacy, you know, and that's why I'm doing these things.
Makes sense.
Yep.
Do you want to check if the recording of the camera is
still
going?
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I just want to take the opportunity in this short break to remind to all the listeners of The Ausländer that they can now purchase and buy the NFTs of some of the episodes of the podcast. You need to go directly to the uncut.fm website where the NFTs are uploaded. The links are in the bio of the Instagram, social media, and all the episodes that are available already on the Uncut FM. And there you will find the NFTs that are still available. So some of them are already nearly to be sold out. Why? Why should you do that? So once you purchase one of the episodes of The Ausländer, you will become owner and co-owner of the podcast itself. So you will become part of the community of the podcast where you can exchange experiences. But on top of that, you will receive for the episode that you purchase a physical copy of the artwork created for that episode and a digital version of it, but also an opportunity to meet with the guest and myself either online or in person and exchange our experiences. So give it some love and go to uncut.fm and check for the episodes of The Ausländer. With that said, let's go back to the episode. So we are back.
We are.
We grab another bottle of this thing. We start, or let's put it in property. Tassos, it's doing what I'm lazy to do. And he probably brought a camera and is recording the episode. So maybe that will be interesting, because maybe we can put a little bit of it or I can use a little bit of the recordings.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, we were just in the moment of transition, you going out of Mexico City and starting traveling around. You were saying that you were doing like a little bit of backpacking and traveling more or less as a tourist will do in that moment of time. And then you realized that you wanted to be, or to do something a little bit more powerful for yourself, like a little bit more concentration or documentary based. And eventually that's what you are doing mainly right now.
Yep.
Do you remember what was your first project in that direction in Mexico?
Yeah, it's the one, it's also released on my channel. It's it was about the overfishing in Mexico. I'm not like into veganism. I eat everything, because when I'm talking about this project, everybody asks me that. Oh, like, are you vegan? No, I was just like really curious when I found out, you know, that this was happening. And then that led me to a 6-month, 7-month project.
Okay.
Because I started, because I was living the time in a beach town in Mexico, in Oaxaca. Mm-hmm. And then at the time, I had just watched Netflix's Seaspiracy documentary. Mm-hmm. That was really viral. And I was like, that's interesting. And they were mentioning also Mexico in the documentary. And I was like, I live in Mexico. Maybe I can connect those two. And then I started doing research. And initially, I thought I would go just to the beach, because there were some fishermen every morning, you know, fishing, and asking them if they thought their job was dangerous to the environment, if their job had any impact, you know. But then, so I did that, and then editing the project. I mean, then I went to the US, and the project kind of paused, the post-production. Mm-hmm. And then I went back to Mexico a few months later, and I started working again on the project. And I was like, through the stuff that I was reading, because I did a lot of reading, you know, it was like a thesis for like the things that I learned about like fishing. The fishing industry in Mexico is a lot. So I realized that the story wasn't complete, and I had to like, you know, elaborate and go to different places. And yeah, that was my first project, and the project I'm to this day I'm most proud of, man, because it took like so much out of me to finish this project. Because I will forget, I have a friend in New York, he has a production company. And you know, watching, if anybody is, or if you are going to watch this video,
I really did, but yeah.
You did, yeah. So like you can tell there was a lot of work put into it, right? But a person that makes videos can understand better, you know.
Of course.
So this guy, like, we're friends, we just chat every now and then, but we're not super close. And after he watched it, he called me. He never calls me. And he was like, bro, like, that was awesome. How many people were, like, were there on your team? And I was like, what?
What's a team?
What team? You know? So yeah, man, that speaks to, you know, that tells a lot, yeah.
So that happened just after, I mean, backpacking a little bit, I suppose you traveled around, then you decided to settle a little bit for some time in this beach town, or?
I was living there already for a long time, for like a couple of months.
Okay.
Long time.
Long time, yeah, long time for you.
I mean, at that context of traveling, months in a town, yeah, it is. Sounds funny though.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
And then after that, I was trying to like search like different projects, and then I filmed like various stuff. You know, like I went to a small village in also in Oaxaca, and that I think it was the second biggest earthquake in the history of Mexico happened there in 2017. So like I went there to talk to the people, and you know, I started searching about stories that, you know, that you don't see normally on YouTube or on the news, and that, you know, have some kind of impact eventually. So
makes sense. So I have two questions. One, it's going more in like during this whole backpacking and the first months, I suppose, in Mexico, how did you maintain yourself? Because these documentaries, of course, they don't sell themselves. It's not a tangible thing that you work for something and this gives you money directly and you can sustain that at the same time. Do you start also doing the same thing that you were doing here in Greece in terms of like, I have a small contact in this cafe and I do some videos of marketing for in Mexico, or... Or how did it work?
Yeah, I was doing that. Not on a big scale, because I had, not a lot, but I had some savings, and Mexico is cheap. I mean, if you want to travel cheap, you can.
Yeah.
It's not necessary. But I was traveling, you know, really cheap, you know, like hostel life, and Mexico is cheap, especially like when you speak the language, you pay local prices, of course. So I wasn't...
If you don't go to Yucatan, yeah. Yucatan, it's still expensive.
I've never been to Yucatan. When, like, I was 10 months in Mexico, I didn't go.
It's a beautiful part of Mexico.
Yeah.
But of course, it's touristic.
Yeah.
It's like the first destination that everyone goes when...
That's why I didn't go.
Yeah, I can understand.
But yeah, I had some savings, but I was also like doing videos every now and then. In Mexico City, I was doing some, also in Oaxaca, I was doing some, but not on a big scale. I wasn't like really going after it, but yeah, I was doing that as well.
Cool. Then you put United States in there, in the middle of a sentence, like I was living in a beach town in Mexico and suddenly I go to United States. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the United States. I've been a lot of time. I'm a big fan of Latin America in general, and I like really the lifestyle in there. Did you just went for some project border Mexico, United States that drive you into that direction, or it was just like a choice of saying, okay, I want to visit something?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. So when I took the decision to go to the US, and more specifically, like, I want to go to New York, because, like, for those that know...
Super close to Mexico, yeah.
Yeah, not really. So because New York and the rest of the US are two different things, yeah, you know. New York, LA, Chicago, like the big cities are way different than 99% of the US. Definitely. So I was in Guatemala, actually, at the time. I was living in Lake Atitlan, an amazing place.
Wait. How
so, like, after Mexico, I went to Guatemala and then I went to the US.
So you were recording the fisherman thing, then you moved to Guatemala.
No, so, like, I did the fisherman thing, then I did some other projects. I went to Chiapas, which is bordering Guatemala. Right. It's a state that borders Guatemala. So I did some projects there. And then after I filmed that, I was like, okay. Because I was kind of burnt out. I was exhausted because I was filming, like, non-stop. And
that's the reason. It's the documentary about the smuggling drugs? Or
Yeah,
the one that it's not released that you said.
I have three that are not have not released. So one is the it wasn't about smuggling drugs. It was about the situation at the border. Yeah. And then I have one the earthquake one that I went to this town, and I have another one that I cannot talk about.
Okay.
So I did all those three episodes, and I was like, I was so tired, and I had to exit Mexico because of my visa.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, you know. When I entered Mexico, I got 180 days visa, like 6 months.
Yes.
I exited Mexico on day 180. So like the last day.
Yes,
of course. So I just went to Guatemala and I just took a month off, you know.
Okay.
I was just resting, and I went to this amazing place called Lake Atitlan.
Hmm.
And there, you know, I was thinking, okay, I did this. Like, I filmed this documentary series. Like, how, like, do I pitch it to somebody? Like, how do I... Because... You know, it's all about PR, you know? And I was like, and back to before I left Greece, on the second lockdown, I wrote down 6 post-it notes, 6 goals of mine. One goal was to go to New York.
Okay.
On the 6 post-it note. And I remember that I had written in 5 years, and it was like a year later. And I was like, you know what? I will just go to New York, like, and pitch my documentaries, which, like, I had no product at the time ready, but I was just like this ignorant kid, you know, that just wants to do whatever, you know, because when you're young, you think you're invisible and you can do anything, and I'm pretty ambitious myself, so. And I was like, okay, I want to go to New York, but I don't know anyone there, and I didn't really have a lot of savings left.
Mm-hmm.
And to pitch what are you gonna do, you know?
It's perfect to go to New York, it's without great money, because it's a super cheap city. Yes.
I don't recommend it to anyone, but that's what I did. So then I started reaching out to people I had met in my life in general. I might have known them through social media or like in person. But anyone that had any connection to the US, I started DMing all those people. I was like, hey, I want to go to the US. Like some people that I knew were living in Seattle, you know, in the other side of the country. But I was just like texting anyone, you know. I was so determined. And so I found this guy. He's Greek-American, but at the time he was living in Greece. And I didn't know him personally. I knew him through a group I had on Facebook for creators in Greece. So we knew each other only through social media. And before he left the US in 2020, he did van life. So he bought a van and he went from Pennsylvania, he went to Miami, to Florida, and then all the way back. So we're talking with him, and I was like, bro, like, do you know anyone that could help me in the US, maybe with like accommodation or like... with connections, like, in regard to filmmaking. And he's like, yeah, I can help you. Like, I have family there, not in New York, but in Pennsylvania, like 3 hours from New York. And he's like, yeah, my family can host you and whatnot, but how are you going to move? You know, because you know,
because it's United States.
Exactly, because it's not like you can walk. You know, to go to the mall, you need to drive 10 kilometers. So I was like, I don't know, but I'll figure out. He's like, wait. So like, he had left his van at his uncle's place. So he's like, look, you can take my van. Because
all of this without knowing this person,
without knowing me, yeah,
okay,
only through social and through because we had done some Zoom calls, I was doing mm-hmm. some trainings at the time. So, he's like, take my van to move around, and you can sleep also because it was like a van, you know, to sleep.
Camperized, yeah,
exactly. So, but the van was sitting for like a year and a half, so it was in terrible condition. So, just go to the US with not a lot of savings
to Pennsylvania, not to New York.
To Pennsylvania, exactly. Yeah. I fly into Philly. And so I go to this in the middle of nowhere. So like, you know, in this driveway, you know, it was like the mountains. And there was this van waiting for me.
I cannot hear Philly, man. As a comedian, a stand-up comedian right now, I hear about people about Philly and I have the slap of Chris Rock and Will Smith in my head all the time. Yeah, I cannot stand Philly people, you know? Like,
yeah. I mean, Philly is a beautiful city, yeah. Huh? It's really nice city. But but the van was in the outskirts of Pennsylvania. It was like 1 hour from Philly.
Okay.
So I went to this like this, how you say, in the middle of nowhere, man. Yeah. Like, you know, in the mountains, like green, like fields and stuff like that. So I go there, and so the family knew I was picking up the van, so they left me the keys, but they weren't there. So, because it was daytime.
Random.
Yeah, so I just show up at this place. I take the van. The van was super bad. And I was like, okay, now what? You know? I will go to New York. I don't know anyone. So like, I spent the next few weeks in Pennsylvania because I needed to fix the van and whatnot. So, the friend that gave me the van, that owned the car, connected me with a friend of his, and she helped me with stuff. And I was lucky enough that I got a client in Europe, you know, to work remotely. Mm-hmm. So I was making some money because, you know, being in Mexico and Guatemala, like paying, I don't know, $1 for a coffee.
Yes.
And then going to the US and it's like $10 mm-hmm. for a coffee. You know, it's a bit...
It's a difference, yeah.
It took me some time to adjust. So like for the next couple of weeks, I was working like all day online, as I told mm-hmm. you. And then at night, I was... emailing creators in New York. I was living in the van in Pennsylvania in some random parking lot, you know, in the gym mm-hmm. because, you know, when you do van life, you pay a gym subscription okay. only to take a shower.
Yes, of course, it makes sense.
Yeah, so I was outside the gym and just like using gym Wi-Fi, and I was DMing all these big YouTubers and big creators in New York, and I was like, hey, I just moved to New York and this is my name, and I was attaching my portfolio. And but I was in Pennsylvania, you know, I was in New York. And my pitch was like, you know, if you have any videos and any work, you like any projects, I will, like, and you need some help, I will do it for free.
Okay.
So I was just trying to get my foot into the door to, like, mm-hmm. meet the creator community, you know.
Enter the big city. Yeah,
exactly. So after doing, you know, all this... after like a lot of emails, I remember like every day I was working, and then, you know, I was emailing one big, really big YouTuber, man. I was like, I used to watch his videos before I started YouTube. He responds, he's like, bro, I really appreciate this. I have this event on Monday. You can come. It was in this insane tower in Manhattan, man, like an insane project.
And that was Sunday night.
It was Monday morning. It was it was Monday evening. Yeah, it was like a charity.
No. The event, it was Monday evening. You had 3 hours drive and it was two hours. No, there is no American film there, no.
No, it wasn't like that. But it was like a few days earlier. Cool. And I was like, I'll film, but wait for it because there's always, twist to the story. Mm. So because I was leaving the van and whatever. So a few days before the event... So we arranged with this guy that I'm going to film for him for free. And a few days before that, they robbed me. I was in the van and a junkie came up to me with a knife.
Oh, shit.
And he's like, oh, you know, whatever. So I gave him my camera and some stuff. So I had no camera. So how am I supposed to film for this guy that I, you know, it was my only opportunity to get into the New York community. I still had my drone, thank God. So I filmed with my drone. I told this guy, hey, I don't have my camera anymore. He's like, no worries, just come. So I go there, and it was funny because imagine, because I don't have a lot of money. Don't forget, I was eating like from supermarket, and I was staying in the van. So imagine from that, like I remember eating sandwiches in my van and then driving 3 hours, like taking the, I drove to Jersey, then I parked there. I took the train to go to this insane tower in Manhattan, and like an insane project. And because it was so fancy, there was a list. So I was on the creative team list, you know, I was on the list. And this guy was like, you know, I had to buy some clothes because I had like some backpacking clothes. So I bought some clothes from a thrift store, just not to look like, you know, like a traveler. So I show up to that place because I remember the event had a dress code, like smart casual or something. So I go there, and there's this guy with a suit, you know, at the entrance of the building, you know, and he was like, oh, like, what's your name? Like, I'm like, so I tell him my name, and he's like, yeah, you're on the list. I didn't know there was a list, you know. So I go, and it's this insane place, man, like overlooking Manhattan. And I go there, and because I went early before the event started, you know, to coordinate with the filmmaking team. And this YouTuber, his name is Brett Conti, he was there. And he's like, oh, you're a Greek Solo, because that's my brand. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it was a surreal moment, you know, because like he came up to me, and the Manhattan skyline was behind, and like he knew my name, and I used to watch his videos like 3 years ago.
Is this a Hollywood film?
Like, could be. And so long story short, so like, you know, I filmed for him, but of course I went there to meet everybody there, you know, that was my purpose. So I filmed, and then I started pitching to every single person on that rooftop. It was like 200 people, like YouTubers, like it was like some famous people. So like, you know, so I just started talking to everybody, and I was like, hey, it's my first day in New York, and I did this documentary series in Mexico. And everybody was like, cool, like, where can I see it? I was like, it's not ready yet. But, you know, I had this enthusiasm, and I was like, this is what I do. So after talking to everybody, one person came through. One person, Steve Yalo, he's also a filmmaker, YouTuber. He's like, bro, I really appreciate what you do. And he was living 1 hour outside of the city in Long Island. Mm-hmm. And he told me, you know what, I have a friend there. Maybe he can host you for, like, you know, the duration of your stay here. So I was like, say no more. So I drove to that place. I meet this guy, and you know, he hosts me for the duration of my stay, and I use that as my base to then connect with people, filmmakers in New York. I did collaborations with like big YouTubers and stuff like that. So, you know, I kind of, and I still have this contact to this day, you know. Nice. So that's kind of how the New York story went. And then after all that, then I went back to Mexico.
To Mexico, not to Guatemala.
No, then I went, after New York, I went back to Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where in Mexico?
Mexico City.
Again. Here we go again. Now knowing that you cannot go out with a camera in your hand. Cool. And then from that point, at which point, like, time perspective we are, because I'm absolutely like
lost
in where we are. How many months have you been out of Greece at that point of time already? Like, are we talking about 2021 already, or that happened in a collapse of 7 months?
So I'll tell you what. So I went to Mexico November 2020. Yeah. I stayed in Mexico and Guatemala collectively around 7 months, 7.5 months. And then after that, I flew to the US. I stayed 3 months in the US.
Okay.
And then I went back to Mexico. So we're talking about like 10, 11 months at this point. Then I spent another 3 months in Mexico. My plan was to renew my passport, because I had to renew my passport at the Greek embassy in Mexico City. Yes. It's another long story, but as now that you live in Greece, you know that things don't work here.
Yes.
So as bizarre and as crazy as this sounds, they could not renew my passport, like the freaking embassy, and I had to come back to Greece to renew my passport.
So you literally left Mexico, coming back here just to renew your fucking passport.
Exactly. That's the reason I came back, yeah.
What the fuck?
Because the plan was to renew my passport and then go back to the US.
what the fuck? Like, sorry, but that's just...
I know. And like, I tell you, like, this is a long story, but, like we can take a few minutes. Because I knew that it was, I think it was October 2021 at that time. And I knew that, like, 6 months ago, because I knew all my planning, like going to the US, going back. So I knew that October 2021, I would be Mexico City. So I was in contact with them for the past 6 months.
Mm.
I was calling the Greek embassy and I couldn't find a person speaking Greek. So let's start there. So like I called so many times, everybody was speaking Spanish. Thank God I spoke Spanish.
Yeah.
So, and they were telling me, yeah, we're not sure because this guy that is responsible for doing this cannot. I was like, bro, like, you're a freaking embassy. You're gonna make me go back to Greece. It's not like it's like next door.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that you're flying from I don't know, from France.
Exactly. So, but you know what? Like everything happens for a reason. And then I came back. I renew my passport. And as soon as I renew my passport, of course, it's not pleasant. But the war, the invasion in Ukraine started, and I was like, I was kind of glad to be here, not because this was happening, but because I was here to go and document it. So I guess me coming back, there was a reason for that, and that reason was me contributing in this way.
So before we come to the topic of going back to Europe and Europe starting or Russia starting a war against Ukraine, 3 months, the last 3 months in Mexico, besides this whole bureaucratic bullshit, which is literally bullshit, like nothing else. Like it's ridiculous that an embassy of a country can, in the capital of that country, it's not that it's in a small delegation of the government or whatever, it's the embassy of a country in the capital of another country cannot issue a passport, which is ridiculous.
They don't even speak the language they're supposed to speak.
I don't know, that's super crazy. I mean, yeah, it's Greece.
Exactly.
Any crazy story that you remember from these last 3 months? I mean, we have... During the break, we were talking about dengue. Like, yeah. I think you need to explain this.
So
dengue in COVID times. So yeah. I would call it like this. What happened there?
Yeah, so dengue fever, for those of your listeners that don't know, is a disease that you gets to your body from mosquitoes, and there is no vaccine as far as I'm concerned about this. So it's a really dangerous disease, and you have like high fever, you have rash, you scratch all your, like you feel all your body's about to explode, and it's a really bad like a disease, and if not treated like in time, you can actually die from it. And you know, in tropical climates,
mosquitoes,
you know, there are mosquitoes that, you know, they carry dengue, unfortunately. And it was the second time I had dengue at that point, and it wasn't pleasant. And I remember it was like a month before I came to Greece, and then I had left Mexico City and I went back to tropical climate in Mexico in the beach town, and I got dengue, but I didn't really know because I was like, yeah, I have fever, but I'm not sure. So I was just staying home. But I had like really high fever, man, like 40, 41, and I was living alone. You know, it was like really tough because when you're this weak, you also need to eat. So I couldn't like cook. It was like really bad. And I had to do this interview for this, like for television. And then I didn't want to cancel it last minute, not to hang out to dry the journalist. And I remember I had 40 fever, and then I did the interview. Like, I don't know what I was saying. And then as soon as it ended, like, I just closed the laptop and almost fainted. You know, I was super bad. But you want the other maybe story with dengue? Because I had dengue also before going to the US.
Okay.
Yeah, so I had like 2 weeks of like nonstop, because dengue, like we have to inform it, has 4 strains. So you can get dengue 4 times in your life. I had it twice.
Twice.
I'm this lucky. So before going to the US, like the past 2 weeks, like you know, 2 weeks before going to the US, those 2 weeks I had like dengue, and I was like in bed, super bad. And then I remember the first day that I felt kind of like stronger, that I had like started recovering, I had to fly to the US. And as soon as I go there, they...
Before going to a van in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, before going to a van in Pennsylvania. And I had also like broken up with my girlfriend at the time. So I was super bad psychologically and physically because of Dangi. And as soon as I arrived at the airport in Philadelphia, they detained me for like 3-4 hours. It was one room with like 8 police officers and myself. Mm-hmm. And it was like this intense situation, like, you know.
From, yeah, I know it, I know it.
You know yourself. And I was like, I remember like there were 8 people asking me questions simultaneously, and I didn't know what to answer, you know. And then I was given an answer, and then 5 minutes later they were asking me the same question in a different phrase.
So you can group, yeah,
exactly. So I remember after that I was like, damn, and now I have to go to this van
and repair it. Oh man, that sounds really exhausting. Like, yeah. I mean, this whole detention thing, like the questions are ridiculous. Like, are you willing to kill the president of the United States and these kind of questions? And they were like, no, I'm coming here just like, I don't know. I mean, I know it, and I guess it was just, I'm coming here to study English, like, which is like even more ridiculous because, I mean, you had a purpose of going to there, but it's more difficult to justify. In my case, for example, it was like, okay, yeah, I'm coming here to study. I mean, I'm literally coming here to study with... within a school that it's that I paid to study with them for learning English. So, but I know what you mean. I mean, it's this whole situation, and especially in your case, if you're coming out of a disease that it's exhausting physically and mentally, not best moment mentally either, knowing that you are going into a place that it's like a little bit randomized, like you're having this situation where you're picking a van in somewhere, like in a random whatever.
Yeah, and I was also like traveling 7 months, so they were like, oh, how are you making money? And like, how much money do you have with you? And I was like, this amount of money. And then, oh, who are you going to meet there? And, you know, so they, because for them, I guess they need a steady income and they need all that. So me, like, traveling 7 months, they were like, how are you traveling 7 months? I was like, my rent is $100 in Mexico, you know? And for them, it's $100 they pay a day in the US. So it's a whole different thing.
Crazy. I think we need to do another small technical stop, recording-wise.
I think it's going to be the longest podcast you've
ever. No, it's not. But let's do this small, tiny break, and then we can jump back to Greece and the last months with Ukraine, which I think it's worth to take some time in it.
Hey there. This is Marc Alcubé, and I want to use this short break just to remind all the listeners that if you have any great experience, you've lived abroad, you've immigrated to another country, and you want to come to the podcast as a guest, and you want to explain all these amazing stories that you have, you just can directly send an email to theauslander.podcast@gmail.com, or you can contact and DM me directly through Instagram, and we can talk about it. Let's check it out, let's build community, and let's bring more guests to the podcast. With that said, let's go back to the episode.
So, second stop of this episode. We were just talking about you coming back for the fucking reason that you cannot renew a passport, but you stayed here because of the war of Ukraine. And I think when we met each other like some months ago, you had the idea in mind of going to Ukraine, and actually you were telling me this in a meetup of the expats group that we met each other, and you were saying me, I probably will go, and it was like 3 days later that you were going directly there. So you've been on 2 trips to Ukraine right now.
Well, yeah.
Ukraine border, the first one, then you went deep in the second one, as far as I know.
Yeah, I mean, even the first one, I went to Lviv, which is western Ukraine, but it's still, you know, like, I mean, it's considered a safe part, but still, sirens go off. And yesterday, I got, you know, because I have contacts there, my friends in Lviv and in Kyiv, and I was talking to my friend, I was like, oh, how are things going? Is it better? Like, because they're in western Ukraine, I was like, oh, I hear that the fight now is moving east. And he's like, oh, yeah, yesterday we had like 3 rocket attacks in Lviv. So even if it's like, yeah, you can say, oh, it's close to the Polish border, you know, still, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I have the feeling that, like, with everything and with every conflict and with absolutely every new, we have the same problems as always. With time, everything gets dissolved and media stops talking about it as they did at the beginning of the conflict, for example. Mm-hmm. And people start thinking that the situation, it's, I don't know, more or less stable. And it's actually, it's not. Like, it's still happening, a lot of things. Yeah. Let's talk about your experience in there, because I think that's one of the most valuable things of having someone who has really been able to be in the line. We can talk it from the perspective that you prefer. Mm-hmm. I think you really did volunteering also in the borders with refugees. You were doing a first documentary, which I already edited, and it's live in YouTube.
It is, yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, you know, the story starts before the full scale invasion, because you've seen my documentary. But as soon as I mean, we have to say that the war has been going on for 8 years in Ukraine. It's not something new, but the full scale invasion is something new. So, yeah, I was in Greece, and, you know, as a creator, like, actually, it's funny because I had met a girl in Greece that she's studying here, that she was Ukrainian, and she is Ukrainian, sorry. And she would go, like, you know, I was seeing everything in the news, like the build-up, you know, that Russia was, like, had a lot of troops at Ukraine's border. And she was like, we're talking. And she's like, oh, by the way, I'm going to Ukraine, like, 2 days. And it was like, you know, because I remember I had done a screening of my overfishing documentary at my house. And then she tells me, oh, like, I'm going to Ukraine. I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And because she's from Kharkiv, that is near the Russian border, that is one of the cities that now has been totally destroyed. So she was going there. And I was like, that's really interesting. I was like, how are things there? And I would like to come to document, you know, because one of the reasons I do what I do is I don't really trust mainstream media. I want to go and see how it is for myself. Mm. I like talk to the people, see, like, is it that bad? Is it worse? Is it better? You know? So out of curiosity, I started planning a trip with her, and the invasion started on February 24th. And on February 25th, I had a flight to Kyiv in the morning of 25th. I remember, like, 23rd at night, we're still making plans because I had, like, a whole shooting schedule. Are we going to go to that location? Because nobody really expected, like, the full-scale invasion, you know? Like, there was a build-up. Now, of course, it sounds maybe a bit bizarre because of everything about what's going on. But before, nobody really expected, like, a full-scale invasion, you know? So I was like, okay, I'll go to the border. And we had all these locations. And I go to sleep on 23rd at night. And then 24th, I wake up and all my WhatsApp was going crazy. This is like, and all of the people that we had connections with on the ground, they were like, don't come. Because the next day I was flying. And I hadn't opened the TV yet, so I didn't know. I was just seeing my phone. I was like, what the, you know? And I opened TV and I was like, what? What's going on? And, you know, this girl, my main contact, that she was in Kharkiv, they were in the basement, and she was like, oh, tanks are in my city. And I was like, what? It was like so mind-blowing. And I was sad for two reasons. Like, first, for obviously for what was happening, and secondly because I wasn't there to document it. I was like, damn, I would go tomorrow. Not that I want it to happen, you know, but I was like, if it were to happen, I would like to be already there to document what's going on. And that's not because I want to die or I'm crazy. It's because I have this desire to leave a legacy, like we're telling before, you know, to give some value to the society, you know. At least I think it's valuable. And yeah, so for the next week, I was talking with them, with my contacts on the ground, and I felt really helpless. And I was like, I gotta do something. I cannot sit around, do nothing, you know. So I just hopped on a flight, and my plan was initially to go just to the border, because I didn't know at the time, I didn't know that you could cross into Ukraine from land.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'll just go to the border. And so I went online, I searched, I saw which countries obviously border Ukraine, there Hungary, Slovakia, you know, other countries, Poland, and I just found the cheapest flight to Hungary. And I was like, whatever, I'm just flying there. So I took the next flight a few days later, arrived there on the 2nd of March, so a week into the war. And it was intense, man. It was the first time, as I told you before, like I have a lot of experience in high tense environments, but this was like a whole different level, because as a creator, like, and as a filmmaker, for example, I'm there to document what's going on for somebody to see what's going on that cannot be there. But it's really difficult, for example, at the border, you know, it's refugees, right? And it's mothers that, and children that they separate with their, I don't know, with the males, because the males cannot exit the other country. And, you know, they're crying and all that. And it's really like with your stomach, it's so like, you don't know what to do. You know, it's like, do I film this or am I being disrespectful? Mm-hmm. So there's a really fine line of like documenting and also like being as respectful as you can be, you know. But at the same time, you know, and doing that, and I realized that after I released my documentary from Ukraine, the people there really appreciate it. So from my perspective, I may be thinking, oh, this is maybe disrespectful, but they really appreciate, like,
that someone is keeping the bill, that someone is really giving the perspective, at least.
Exactly. And they really appreciate also you being there. Everybody was like, oh, you're from Greece, what the hell are you doing here? So yeah, back to my first trip. So I initially thought I would go to the border. So I go to the Hungarian border. There were some journalists there. And so like I talked to different journalists there. And everybody was telling me, you have to go to Poland, because Hungary wasn't like super intense, you know. And they told me, if you really want to capture this story, you have to go to the Polish border. And funny enough, like if you see the map, like they're super close, but if you don't have a car, I had to go back to Budapest. I did like a 20-hour trip with trains through Czech Republic just to go to the Polish border. So
there's no other connection.
Yeah. I mean, with public transport, no. Unfortunately, no. So I do all this trip and I arrive at the Polish border. I remember like 5, 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
It was craziness. And you have to bear in mind in all that, I arrive there, but I have no accommodation. So I arrive super late and I don't have accommodation because specifically at the Polish border, because the volume of refugees is so high, hotels, everything is booked. You know, you're not booked in advance.
Definitely.
So I arrived there having no idea what I'm going to do. I had some contacts, you know, from Facebook groups and stuff, but nobody had gotten back to me. So I go there, start filming. It was like really intense. And then last minute, somebody gets back to me and I get a place to sleep at night, you know. So there's all those things that, you know, they don't get on screen, you know. So yeah, I arrived at the Polish border and... yeah, man, it's really sad, you know. It's like, it's really difficult also for me to talk about it because, you know, I mean, what can I say? I mean, we know what's happening, right? And but to see it, like, because I thought I would be ready, like, psychologically, but no one can really be ready about this, you know. And then maybe you've seen this.
The musician,
yeah. But also, like, if you haven't watched my video, maybe your listeners have seen this pianist that he was all over the news. So I meet this guy, and he was so inspiring. And me, him, and another American filmmaker, we decide to cross into Ukraine to go to Lviv from Poland for him to play, at the train station in Lviv. And I was like, you know what, let's do it. And but then, you know, we cross, and as soon as I crossed into Ukraine, bro, it was like such an intense experience, because I cannot explain it. My stomach was like, was so intense, you know. I was like, am I in a war zone right now, like, you know. Anyway, so we arrived at Lviv, Davide, the pianist that brought his piano from Germany to Poland, and this guy has also a really, like, crazy story. He's also played in Afghanistan with a piano.
Oh, really?
His flight, like NATO forces have flown his piano with the plane to Afghanistan.
Crazy.
For him to play there. So this guy is super cool. And yeah, we go there, he plays, it was... I felt like, you know, there are some moments in time, I felt like I was part of like a movie or something, you know. I felt like I was part of Schindler's List or something, you know, because there was this outside of the train station in Lviv, in Ukraine, there was, because that's the city that most Ukrainians go before they flee. They take trains to whatever border they want to. And there was so many people. It was so intense. Like, people, like, really stressed for obvious reasons because they're escaping war. And at the same time, he was playing, like, piano. It was, like, this whole, like dramatic... Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It was, like... Yeah. I was, like... And from my perspective...
It creates an environment. Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's really sad, but it's also, like, so beautiful in its sadness, you know? So we did that... And we managed to get out, and then I came back. I was like, you know, here nothing, so I'm staying in a 9 square meter room. Like, it was like so small space. And I was just editing all day, like not leaving that 9 square room, and just like for 2 weeks editing. And then I put it out, and you know, I felt like I did my part. And then, but we have to mention how I went back, because first time I really wanted to go to Kyiv, but it wasn't possible because there was like active fighting going on, and my friends in Lviv told me it's not possible, you know. And then second time I decided I'll just go to the border in Poland, because now I already had contacts, just to volunteer. Because, you know, obviously help is needed. So I went there. I was just volunteering for a few days. I also got super sick for 5 days. So arriving in Poland, this podcast is going to be me being sick all the time.
Yes.
But so as soon as I arrived, 5 days I was sick. But then I was volunteering for a few days. You know, they have these big refugee centers.
Do they organize it through organizations? That's one of the questions that I wanted to ask you. Like, it's like you are volunteering knowing that you are going within a specific organization, or there is really like random people going and trying to volunteer as much as they can without having an organization behind? And how did you do it?
Like, yeah, majority of people are through organizations, like big organizations, like, you know, like refugees,
Red Cross,
like from Red Cross. But you can also go as an individual. So there are both options, you know? Like, most people go, like 90%, I would say, go through organizations. But there's also, like, I don't know, local Polish people or, like, you know, foreigners that just go to help, you know. So I was helping there. And what I realized the second time around was that because in Poland, at the Polish border, there are two main spots. It's the actual crossing point that people actually cross on foot and by car. And then there's like 15 kilometers further into Poland, there's like a big train station that people that don't have cars, they get transported there, you know, from, you know, to go further inside Europe. At the actual border crossing, the first time I went was chaos, man. It was like no tents, nothing. It was like, you know, of course there were people helping, but it was unorganized. Second time I went, it was like super organized, like it was like a different place, you know. But there was less people, like way less people crossing into Poland. And at the train station, there were still like, it was still intense, but I noticed there were many people taking trains from there to go back to Kyiv. So many Ukrainians were going back into Ukraine second time around. This is, what time frame is this? I think it's like early April, like mid-April, yeah. And that was really interesting. And then I contacted my friends into Ukraine, and I was like, is it possible to go to Kyiv maybe? And they were like, yes, it's possible, because it had been just a few days after the Russians retreated from the outskirts of Kyiv. And of course, everybody that has been following the news knows about the Bucha massacre and everything that happened there. So my friends were like, we can take you to Bucha, you know. And bear in mind, I want to make this really clear. I'm not like a journalist. I'm not a local. So for me, being there as a foreigner, because there are many military checkpoints, so for me to get there is like, what's your purpose? Because mm-hmm. like if you have a camera, they ask you, like, or journalists, like, okay, what's your pass? Where's your pass credential? And yeah, you know what I'm saying? Credential. So for me, I have to figure out all the logistics mm-hmm. of getting there, you know? So it's really stressful on that part as well. I managed to do it like a second time around. We went to Buchaman and not even like before we arrived at the actual like where the heavy fighting took place, but even, you know, a few kilometers outside of Kyiv, like at the main road, it was so intense, man. Like, I remember me and my friend, he was Ukrainian, and he took me there. Before we arrived there, because he hadn't been there, because he lives in Lviv, he hadn't seen like really like mm-hmm. intense pictures like this. And I remember on the way there, we were talking like normally. And as soon as we arrived there, and the whole duration is like a 5-6 hour drive together. And all the way back, we didn't talk to each other. You know, it was like so intense. Yeah. And I thought for the second time, because I was like, okay, like, I think I can manage this psychologically, you know, like the cruelty.
We have a cat.
We have a cat on the table.
We're recording, yeah. No worries.
No, it's okay. Yeah, and just to conclude, and I was like, oh, I can manage this psychologically mm. because I have been already one time in the Ukraine. I've heard the sirens. Like, I know how it is. It's totally different just going there and just seeing the total destruction and everything that took place, you know. It's like really, really intense, man. Like, and I'm still recovering from that experience, to be honest. That's one of the reasons I've been like back for like 1 month now, more or less. And I haven't found the strength to edit the video because I cannot, like, I see the raw footage on my computer and it's so tough.
Did you find a way to record in there? Like, because I mean, we were talking about this like in the last meeting also, and I mean, I can imagine, and I put myself in there. I will block probably from a perspective of, were you able to literally in that scene where you can cut the air with a knife, like literally the air is thick. It's an ambient that it's collapsing you emotionally probably. Were you able to take the camera out and record things, able to do a documentary out of what was going on?
I mean, to be honest, it's not going to be a documentary because
you were not probably able to talk with people or...
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have enough time, you know, because as I said, I was a journalist. We had to go in and out of the villages like really fast. Like, I'll tell you an example. For example, we entered Bucha and then we stayed there like, what, 40 minutes or something. And then on the way back, because there are checkpoints every few kilometers, at the checkpoint they told us, oh, now it's closed the way back. You cannot go back. And we're like, we just came the other way around. And we go to Lviv, you know, like in Western Ukraine. And, you know, just talking to them, they eventually let us pass. But, like, you know, they could be like, because officially we would like be stuck in Bucha, you know what I'm saying? So like things change really fast. So there's no filming schedule, you know? So it's really, I managed to film something. It's going to be probably like a smaller video, or it's going to be maybe footage. If I want to do a bigger documentary in the future about the whole situation, I'm going to use this footage, but it's not going to be like a big, like, you know, a documentary because I didn't have enough time. And psychologically it was tough, but you know, like, I realized also for my first time that the historical significance of me just capturing something is it's way bigger than, you know, my psychological state at that point. It's difficult. I mean, it's easy to say now, but being there is really tough, man. Like, it's really, because you talk to people.
That's a reflection that you do afterwards.
Yeah, you talk to people there and like, and people like, yeah, my neighbor was shot and stuff like that, you know. And I was like, what, you know? And
you are not able to take, I mean, that's what I was going also, like, you are not, when you were on the first documentary and the first time that you were there, mm-hmm. you were able to talk with people, you were able to record and ask questions to people with a camera in front, because it's a situation where you are not under this stress of constantly being in
danger. They feel they have been through a traumatic thing, but they're feeling that they are in a safe area now, at least more or less. I don't really know, but I had the sensation from looking to the first documentary that was more or less more easy to take for them. I can imagine that recording in Bucha or in Kiev at that point of time, it's not possible to go to someone and say, hey, sorry, can I ask you some questions?
I did it. So yeah. I have an interview there with a guy that, you know, was willing to talk about it, because you have to keep in mind, it's what I told you before, that of course it's the way you ask, and you have to be like, no pressure. It's like, but the people there really want to spread the word out, you know. So when they see somebody, then they ask, because of course I had a translator. Mm. They're like, oh, this guy just came from Greece, and because I don't work for any medium, like I don't work for somebody, I'm on my own, they really respect that. So like, people are more keen to talk. Of course, not easy, but yeah, man, it was difficult. But, you know, as I said, historical significance is huge, you know. But as I said, I'm still recovering, you know. I can, like, coming back, I couldn't. It was Easter time here in Greece, and my mom was like, oh, let's, like, you know, because it's a happy time here. Yeah. And I was like, mom, I can't, you know. She's like, oh, come to Thessaloniki, to my hometown, to celebrate. I was like, for 1 week, I just did nothing, you know, just inside, watch Netflix and just eating junk food, because, and I'm still, like, coping with it, to be honest. It's also, like, now talking about it really makes me uncomfortable, yeah, because it's really difficult, you know. It's really tough, man. And at the same time, I feel kind of guilty. I was like, oh, I'm just, like, going there for a few hours and then leaving, thinking of the people that I have actually gone through that, you know. So it's just, like, two sides of me that are like, oh, like, I feel really bad, but at the same time, I feel bad about feeling bad. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So it's a really tough process, man. But yeah.
Well, at least, I mean, I want to thank you for sharing and knowing that is a difficult topic and that you're still coping with it, and that you take the time also to talk about it in the podcast. Unfortunately, we are running a little bit out of time. I have the two questions. I mean, one of them, I think it's. I think I want to do it by asking the question and responding by myself, which will be the second one. But first, any general recommendation that you will give to people who are willing to go emigrate to another country, in the countries that you've been or not in the countries that you've been? Mm-hmm. Do you have any generic tip that you will want?
Yeah, I mean, first tip, I think is the most important thing, is that just do it, you know. I'm going to give more practical tips in a minute, but most people, because, you know, because I do social media, they ask me many times, I get many messages, oh, like, how to do this and that and that and that. People want, like, a blueprint of, like, 1, 2, 3, like, a to-do list, per se. But immigrating to another country is, like, you don't know the problems you're going to face until you face them, you know, and it's not going to be comfortable and it's not going to be easy. So, you know, I feel like people many times that are thinking of immigrating, and that's the reason I think, because I know many people thinking to immigrate and actually, like, very few people that actually do it, because most people, I think it's like an excuse wanting to solve all the potential problems that are going to arise beforehand, and that's not possible. So I think this is my first tip. Like, you know, of course, do your research, but just do it. And now I'm getting to the practical part, which is, I don't know. For example, I'll tell you now, because it's really practical for me, because I'm currently trying to move to Spain, right? First and foremost, I'm trying to find a place to stay, you know. So I go online, trying to find a place to stay. Then before I do that, I talk to, if I have some contacts there, and thankfully I do, I ask my friends there, like, which areas are safe? Where should I stay? Where is close? Where is far? And if you don't have a person like that in the place you want to go, just go to Facebook groups and ask questions. People help, you know. It's work, you know. You need to put the time. And yeah, and for example, in my case, thankfully I have a skill that I can apply when I arrive there, meaning I make videos and take pictures. But I think initially, you know, I will just go, like, I find a place, I go, and you know, initially I'm going to do a survival job, like mm-hmm. waiter or something, until I establish a network of individuals that I can, you know, I can generate clients from, you know, because what I do, I need clientele, and I don't have a clientele in a new country. So I don't know, just do it, man, you know, just do some research and just do it.
Makes sense. Well, the second question that I always ask at the end of the episode, it's any personal projects, any projects in it that you have in mind that you want to use this channel to promote? I mean, we already talked about the Greek Solo, so definitely that's your personal project, and I think it's worth it to mention, so go for it.
Yeah, so it's a Greek Solo is my brand in all social platforms like Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, you name it. And I have also a website, agreeksolo.com. You can find like more, you know, more about my work. At the moment, that's it, man. At the moment, as I told you, I'm just going to try to take a break. Actually, I'm actually through an ongoing social media detox.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have any of the social apps on my phone. Just trying to really like cope with what happened in Ukraine. Just edit past work that I have that needs to be finished in post-production. And that's it, man. A Greek Solo everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, go and give some love to this guy. In social media, even if he's doing a detox from it, the things are still there. So he will come back at some point, that's for sure. Thank you so much for taking part of the Ausländer, and especially for taking the time to talk about your whole experience, not only about Ukraine, but the whole experience and coming with a different perspective, which is coming from filmmaking, for doing things, and how your life was through this. So thank you so much.
Thank you, man. It was great being here. You know, also like having a conversation like this is also a coping mechanism, you know, talking with somebody, because I don't talk about all that by myself, you know. Yeah. I would be crazy, but so thank you for taking the time as well.
Well, that's the end of the episode. Cheers, Tassos.
Cheers, man.